Now, I've got a couple more questions I want to ask you, Rocky, and then I want to work through some of the resources that XL Ministry offers. So we've talked about the pastor, we've talked about the elder, but you've mentioned a couple times the missionary. You know, I think that there may be a misconception on missionaries and what qualifications they should meet and how they should be sent out, but talk about why it is absolutely vital. It's imperative for the missionary that a local church sends out that they also be qualified and be trained, not just in just mission field and mission work, but everything that we've talked about on this episode. Why is that key?
Right. So, I mean, when we think about missions today, it's really in a pretty sad state. A lot of things going on in the name of missions. It doesn't reflect the scriptural priorities. And again, I just think the church is the right place to train, and that includes missionaries. But when you think about it, let's suppose we have some young man come up and he's going to go to he wants to go to an unknown language group, and he's willing to learn a language, make incredible sacrifice so that he can plant a church. You teach them, get them the Bible, and plant a church. Well, that man, it would be very unlikely that he would be trained in the church. And missions organizations, typically their training is pretty limited, or there's some good missions organizations, but they're going to train for the cultural transition and linguistics and things like that that are going to be essential. They're not necessarily training a man to be theologically equipped and practically equipped. So we're sending a man into this foreign context to plant a church. He's probably never been an elder in his own church, probably never even sat on an elder meeting in his own church, never been trained on what it means to be an elder, or how to equip elders. And we're going to send him into a context that's far more difficult and expect him to do all of these things that he's never, ever seen or done in his own church. And the truth is, if a man's going to go out and plant a church and train leaders, he has to be elder qualified. How can he possibly function in that role? He has to be trained to function as an elder. He needs to understand what that means, what it looks like, and he needs to experience it. Whether he is actually on an elder board may or may not happen, but to know exactly what that looks like and what that means, and to have sufficient experience so that he knows not only what it means, he meets the qualifications so that he is in a position that he can train leaders for a church, and then he also has a process how he's going to train leaders when he gets to that church. Most people have nothing. They have nothing. And the consequence of that is just devastating. I recently spoke with a man who oversees a missions organization, and they're planting all of these churches, and he's come to recognize that, you know what, at the end of the day, we're not training leaders for these churches. Well, they're not going to be churches, right? If you don't have leadership, biblically qualified leadership, you're going to be in a desperate situation. But that's the reality of what happens a lot. So in the same way we would train an elder / pastor, we want to train a missionary. And I would say with ladies, if a lady is going to go out with a team to an unknown language group, she will be one of probably two, maybe three ladies that actually will learn and know that language. Does she need to be theologically equipped to be able to teach those ladies? Well, of course. And so we need to provide that kind of equipping in the church, again, so that when we send out missionaries, as one of my Brian Murphy in ministry often says, well, you don't want your missionaries to simply be a postcard on the refrigerator.
Right.
You want them to be an integral part of your church. You want them to have experienced ministry, to grow and be developed as an elder for the men, and certainly theologically capable to provide leadership to the ladies for the women. And that takes work, and it takes intentionality, and it takes time. But again, I would say that there are a lot of young people that God's working in their hearts, and they're willing to go to the most difficult places in the world, but they need churches that are willing to really prepare them well.
Sure. And so, Rocky, maybe if you could just give some encouragement, you know, maybe there's some listening who, you know, they hear this talk about training and resources and it's going to take time and all of that. Maybe if you could just give, you know, just a brief word of encouragement. Although the task may seem daunting, you need to get the ball rolling and, you know, let the Lord work this out over, you know, a number of months or years.
Right. Yeah. And I appreciate that because I believe it's very unkind to address an issue and expose some areas of need and not provide at least help. Okay. It just seems like a very unloving thing to do. And I get that it's hard in the church, especially if you're a solo pastor, but you're out there. It's like, how in the world do I develop that? And that is the heart of our ministry, is that we want to help churches to be able to do that. We get that it's complicated. We get the limitations of time that pastors have and elders have. And so to be really clear, our ministry, we're not trying to make money on the church. We're trying to serve the church. That is our mission. And we write resources to be able to help in training. We set meetings to talk with elders, to talk through issues or how can we help or how can we encourage. Our materials are always available on a donation basis. You can download anything that you want for free. But oftentimes it takes some help and it takes some good resources. And it's not that we think we're the only way or the best way. All we're saying is if we can help, we would gladly do that because we've all served in ministry and we understand the complexity and the difficulties of really developing some helpful training programs. And we would love to be a part if that would be of benefit.
Yeah, that's helpful, Rocky. So here in just a minute, I'm going to go through several resources that you guys offer. And this isn't even all of them. I think I pulled half a dozen. I'm going to let you talk about that. But just in terms of the men involved with XL Ministries, I mean, if you were to add up the years of ministry amongst all of the men, it's several decades, right? So why do you think not only are having sound resources crucial for XL Ministries to be able to provide to the churches that want them, but why is it crucial that you've got men that have been rooted and grounded in the scriptures and have been sort of boots on the ground in ministry for so long? Why is that key?
Yeah, I do think it's important because we've been through the battles. We've been through the heartaches. We know what it's like to fight and we know what it's like to get beat up. I mean, those are just realities of ministry. You know, a lot of folks who have known me for years see me at Countryside, and Countryside's obviously well-established church and a lot of people, but I've worked in a lot of small churches too. And in fact, where I live in Colorado, I attend a little mountain church, probably 50, 60 people. And the priorities at Countryside are the same priorities we need to have in that little country church that I attend. And that's important to understand. This is not an issue of church size, but because we have, we've been in ministry for decades, it does give us an understanding of the realities of ministry and the heartaches and the joys. And everything we write, when we were writing our materials, I tell our guys, listen, if what we write can only be used at Countryside because of its size and resources, and it can't be used where I live, then we're not going to print it. Because the principles apply regardless of the size of church. In fact, I've often said if we only depend on large churches and seminaries to train guys, we'll never have enough.
Right.
If every small church would train, we'd have plenty.
Right.
And
right.
So we care. So that if you're a church out there and you say, yeah, but we only have 50 people, it's like you have 50 people. You're a church. We would love to help. You have 20 people? We would love to help you. This is not about church size. This is about what God has instructed us to do. And we would be glad to help in any situation.
Right. And I appreciate what you said there, Rocky. This material isn't limited to a certain zip code, right? And I think that speaks volumes on how helpful the content is. It's not confined to one zip code and one local church. And I think there's even fruit of that in the ministry as you guys have now printed resources in various languages. I'm not for sure how many different languages, but I'm sure there are more in the works. And your ministry is also expanded beyond the states, right? I think there's international coordinators that you guys have. I'm not for sure the specific titles, but that just speaks to what you're explaining here, is that this isn't just limited to one location, that these resources are helpful all over.
Yeah, it is a global issue and a global need. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Rocky. So let's talk about some of the resources that you guys offer. Again, I pulled about five or six, and you can talk as much or as little as you want on these resources. But just to sort of whet the appetite of what you guys offer and what you're able to get into the hands of churches, let's first start, Rocky, with a book that you wrote called Pastoral Training in the Church. Now, I think you've hit on a lot of the main points in this episode on what you sort of flesh out here in the book, but tell me a little bit about this book and why you believe that it's helpful for the local church.
Right. You know, it's a simple book, honestly. It's just an effort to walk through from the Great Commission into the book of Acts and just see what biblical training looked like. I mean, the church was growing immensely, and yet there were leaders. God provided leaders. And how did that happen? Well, you know, you see how these guys were always working together. They always had people with them. They were always in that process of training. And it's just a reminder. I think it's so easy for the church or a pastor to say, I can't do this. And I'm saying, you must. If God has called you to pastoral ministry, you're faithful men train faithful men. And that is a part of church life. Again, you can use resources, but you got to be committed to the task. So it's just a simple reminder that these are essential things. And we're careful in there, again, not to draw lines, you can't do this. It's just that be primarily responsible. See how it worked out in the book of Acts. See the blessing it is to the church. What a blessing to the church to watch somebody come up and demonstrate giftedness for ministry. And the church watches the elders and the church participates in their training, right? And then they see this person continue to grow and to mature. And pretty soon this young man can teach an adult Sunday school class and everybody's going, wow.
Right.
Amazing.
Sure.
But to me, that's the fulfillment of the Great Commission. And then what are you doing? You're church planning, you're sending out missionaries, any number of things, right? But the church gets to see from evangelism to equipping the saints in every respect. And it's I think it is one of the most dynamic things that can happen in the life of the church. So it's just a simple explanation and reminder.
Yeah, that's great. Rocky, this is about 100 pages, so it's efficient, straight to the point, not a lot of fluff. So Pastoral Training in the Church is what that one is called. This next resource is by Brian Murphy. So he's not here right now, so if we need to critique this a little more, we can. This little booklet, it's titled, Why Does the Church Need to Train Its Missionaries? Why does the church need to train its missionaries? You've talked about this and touched on it briefly, but why would this resource be helpful?
Yeah, and I think when we get back to the basics, oftentimes people think of missions as you just have to know the gospel and send them out. But that's not what the Great Commission says. It says we have to teach them all that God has commanded. And I think far too long, people have thought of missions is something that's very superficial. Oh, you can't serve here, serve overseas. I mean, there are people that we wouldn't let preach here that are training pastors overseas. It's like, what's that about? And so this is a reminder that if we're going to send somebody to the mission field, let's make sure they're elder qualified, let's make sure they're theologically developed, and they have a relationship with the elders of the church and the church so that, again, they are part of the church as they go out, and the elders can affirm their giftedness, their qualifications, how they're equipped, that they're truly prepared to go and do the work that God has called them to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. And within the last year at Countryside, Pastor Tom Pennington, he preached on Matthew 28, and he sort of laid a theological foundation, right, for what we've been talking about, the Great Commission and planting churches and training men and disciples and those things. So he laid out the theological foundation. Then when you actually filled the pulpit a couple weeks back, you sort of laid out the practical, implicational side of Matthew 28. So countrysidebible.org, those two messages are up, but those are very helpful to sort of lay the bedrock and the foundation, but how that's worked out in a local church. This next one here, Rocky, is called Considering Eldership, a Biblical Look at the Qualifications and Responsibilities of Eldership. So you've mentioned that being an elder is more than just the qualifications, but there are responsibilities in that role. So tell me a little bit about this resource and why you think that this would be helpful for local churches to have in their hands.
Right. So a couple of reasons why we put that together. One, I don't know if you've ever had somebody come up to you and said, so what's it take to be an elder in this church? You know, when people ask that question, it usually just reveals a lack of understanding of what the biblical process of becoming and being an elder, you know, is described as in the scriptures. And so I tell pastors, listen, if somebody comes up and asks that question, it's very hard in a few minutes to really communicate the seriousness of the role, both as it relates to character, as it relates to what the service looks like, a servant leadership, sacrifice, accountability, authority, all of those things. I mean, how do you do that in a few minutes? And usually when somebody asks that question, they're assuming that it's a, you know, I mean, I've been here a long time, I give faithfully to church, that kind of thing. So I tell them, give them this booklet and tell them, just fill it out. And when they're done, bring it to you and give you a few weeks to review it. And then you can sit down and visit with them. And truthfully, I'm guessing, but I would say 90% of the people who take that will probably never fill it out because they'll start, they'll go, this is not what I was thinking. I mean, this is, you know, because it gets into the seriousness of the character. It gets into the seriousness of the role, the responsibility and the amazing accountability before God to do this as God has instructed. But on the other hand, it's always possible that somebody comes up and just genuinely wants to learn and just understand eldership more. This booklet is not really designed to equip them to be an elder. It's more designed to help them understand, just better understand, again, the fullness of the role. And so this is something you could give somebody and say, hey, take this and work through it, and it will help you to understand better. And maybe you get together with them later and talk through it. Maybe you don't, but it's a tool that will, at the very least, help them to understand it better. And then they may come back and say, you know, I believe God is really calling me to do that. Now, of course, depending on whether in life, there are different resources we have from there that you could take them. But this can use, it could be used for both purposes pretty easily.
Yeah, what I like about this resource, Rocky, is it's not just a flyer or just bullet points, right? It's an actual workbook where not only are you reading the truth of Scripture and what the Bible says about elders and leadership, but then you're forced to answer questions and reflect on your own life and your heart and really engage with the material as opposed to sort of a superficial, hey, what does, you know, 1 Timothy 3 say or something like that. All right, the next resource, Rocky, Elder Self-Evaluation, a checklist to help a man evaluate his life as an elder. So tell me about this resource.
Yeah, so you know, a lot of churches have perpetual elders. That is, they're not rotating off every 3 years. They become an elder, and they're—I mean, if they're elder qualified, they're an elder, right? And most men, before becoming an elder, will do a very serious self-evaluation to make sure that this is the direction the Lord would be leading them, and they're ready to make such a commitment. But oftentimes, there's not another time in their service where they're encouraged to really do another self-evaluation and just make sure they're doing okay and recognize warning signs. And I think oftentimes, I mean, the truth is, let's say a pastor decides that that would be a good idea. If he writes something like that and gives it to his elders, unfortunately, oftentimes somebody thinks they're being targeted.
Right.
So we're trying to spare the pastor on one hand. And this is a tool where the church can take this and the elders and say, hey, maybe every couple of years, let's just pass these around. Let's all fill it up. It's just a checkup on how you're doing on the qualifications, the character qualifications, how you're doing on the responsibilities. Are there warning signs that maybe you're not thinking right? For instance, let's suppose you've been on the elder among the elders for maybe 10 years, and they bring on a new elder. Well, he doesn't have all the history. And so because he doesn't have all the history, he'll bring up things that you dealt with 10 years ago. And, you know, you could get kind of impatient with that. And it's like, well, that's not good. That's not good. So the elder self-evaluation is just an effort to have checkups from time to time and just make sure there's no warning signs rather than waiting till somebody just goes off the rails. And so, again, just a tool to help elders to think carefully about how they're doing.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So considering eldership, which is the one we talked about previously, is about 50 pages. And then the elder self-evaluation is about 20 pages. So these are digestible, bite-size, although thorough, but bite-size and efficient ways to, you know, accomplish the task at hand. Let's talk about becoming a biblical leader, a workbook for developing leaders in the church. I noticed this is a different color than previous ones that you've had. So I think this might be a second edition or some updates in
there
here?
There may be some updates, but it's pretty much the same.
It's pretty much the same.
Just other people are actually making decisions for us now. They're improving our style here.
So tell me about this one, Becoming a Biblical Leader. This is a workbook. This is a larger workbook. This is over 200 pages. Not a daunting task, but one that can be accomplished. Tell me a little bit about this resource.
Right. So our focus has always been on internships, but when I started working full-time and meeting with churches, one of the things they would say is, do you have anything to train elders? And it's like, no, but we will. And when I began to consider the idea of elder training, what kind of a manual would be put together for helping elders, I really thought that if we only did a book on becoming a biblical elder, most churches probably wouldn't use it, because who wants to get halfway through that and say, ooh, maybe this is a bad idea? So I felt like we needed to have another manual for training leadership generally in the church that would truly just help equip men to be better husbands, to be maybe deacons, to simply serve in the church, just to grow in their own spiritual walk, that there would be a general resource. So we wrote Becoming a Biblical Leader. It's 10 chapters. The manual is designed so you can actually meet just once a month with one or more guys. And all the mentor questions are built in, so there's not a teacher's guide. It's all incorporated. And in the biblical leader, it's intended to accomplish a couple of purposes. Again, one, just to help men become more mature in their faith. And it talks about the church, God's view of the church, our responsibility in the church. It encourages service in the church, to think right about the church, especially in this day and age when people don't think right often about the church. It's like it's an addendum, or, you know, if it's convenient, but that's not what God says, and it's not why Christ died for the church. But it does some other things that are helpful to determine people's giftedness for ministry. So the Biblical Leader book actually goes through elder qualifications. And why do we do that? Because elder qualifications, character qualifications, are Christian qualifications. Right. And so we walk through those, which allows the leaders of a church to actually talk to men about elder qualifications without actually talking to them about being an elder. You just get to learn, what do they think about them? Are they serious? Does it mean something? Do they want to meet those qualifications? Do they understand how those ought to be fleshed out in the Christian life? This manual also provides some Bible knowledge, outlines themes in a few key chapters. And when it comes to, we encourage people to memorize Bible knowledge, but we encourage them to memorize what they're capable of. Yeah, you just have to be careful with memory work, because depending on people's age, background, all kinds of different factors, some may be able to memorize the themes, some may be able to do the themes in the chapter, some may want to do it all. So I would just always caution, pair people up with somebody who's going to do it the same amount they're going to do, but let's not make it a standard of spirituality. It'll be helpful to them, but again, be sensitive. And so they can learn basic Bible knowledge about all the books of the Bible. And then there's a systematic theology question in the chapters, like to define or defend inerrancy. And when we give that question, we provide the scripture and a theological quote. So they don't have to go get other books, which can be a little bit threatening, right? You can get people getting stuff that you don't want them to have. So we provide the information in the context so they can answer it. But at the end of the day, the goal is that they can close their manual, open their Bible, and defend all of the theology that's in there. So this is why I believe in inerrancy, and this is what it means. And here's the scripture I would use. So the mentor questions are always asking them to review their Bible knowledge, systematic theology, because when they're done with the book, answering the questions is not a big deal. We give the answers. We give a quote. We give the verses. The goal at the end is that they know it, and they can defend it. And that means you got to keep practicing. Now, when we have them look at a topic on bibliology, we also ask them to read their church doctrinal statement on bibliology. Why did they put what they put? What is important about that? What would be the danger if it wasn't there? So now, again, as you're meeting with people, you're helping them be more spiritually equipped, but you're also learning how they interact, or how they're understanding the church and the value of the church. You're watching and hearing how they interact with Bible knowledge. Is it important to them to memorize, to learn? Do they want to really learn, be able to get around their Bible? You see how they want to be able to answer theological questions and be equipped if people were to ask them. You see how they interact with their own church doctrinal statement and the seriousness of that. And then there's a section on personal disciplines, how they do it in personal walk with the Lord. Meditation, evangelism, those kind of things. So it is intended to help Christians be stronger, theologically equipped, but it also is intended for the elders to meet with guys and recognize potential men who might be considered as elders someday. Because again, you're talking about the essential things that you want to know about a man before you start them into something like becoming a biblical elder. It can be done weekly. So we have people do it in larger groups, smaller groups. We have them do it in Sunday school, home fellowships. But the idea is if you do it in a larger group, it's helpful if you break down in smaller groups with your elders. So because the idea is you want to learn about these men and how they're interacting with the content and what they're learning, how they're growing, because that's going to be what helps you to identify future leaders in the church.
And this is basically plug and play. I mean, it's all of this is organized in a very accessible format where you can get this delivered to your home or to your church, and you can open it up and just begin. It's not rocket science. You guys have done all of the hard work putting together the material, but actually walking through it just going to take time and dedication. And there's also here, Rocky, I want to mention this. So the person, the individual, would go through this on their own and do all of the Bible memorization and those things and answer the questions, but they're not out on an island for some of this. There's mentor discussion questions where they're supposed to come together with someone and work through, I'm assuming, everything that they just did in
exactly.
that chapter.
I would say if you meet once a month, you probably want to meet for 2.5 hours. Okay, 2.5 hours. Each chapter breaks down easily into sections if somebody wanted to meet more often. I would say that I don't think it's reasonable to do a chapter in less than a month. It's a lot of information. And so you want to do it well. And again, at the end of the day, it's not just filling in the blanks. It's actually being able to defend, to recall your Bible knowledge and to defend your theology, Bible in hand.
Right. So that's becoming a biblical leader. You also have a women's edition of the same content. So tell me a little bit about why you guys put together a women's edition and what we can find in here that's particularly helpful.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, as soon as we finished becoming a biblical leader for men, we immediately had pastors contacting us with, what do you have for ladies?
So this was on demand. This was demand.
So, you know, one of the things that... It is harder, it seems to me, to find good materials to train women, especially in Bible knowledge and systematic theology, as well as some of the practical things. And so,
now, just to be clear, this isn't training women for to be an elder and of that.
So
nature.
I'll explain the difference, because okay. when we had the request, we realized, you know what, we could write a very similar manual, but it can't be exact because the roles are different. But in the becoming a biblical leader for women, all the Bible knowledge and systematic theology is the same. So the guys could and gals
That's
could be
every
separate.
Christian, every separate, Christian.
Yeah, they could come together right. and talk about the Bible knowledge, practice it, or have somebody teach on the systematic theology. But in the dealing with the church and the role of women in the church is not the same as the role of men. So some of those questions have been clearly redone, and even some of the quotes from some famous people about ladies' ministry in the church and the value of women in the church. You know, it's one of those things, we're not training women to be pastors, but sometimes that doesn't mean that they can only be in charge of the banquet. You know, we need them to be theologically capable of discipling other women, of being able to answer questions that are helpful for ladies. When it comes to elder character qualifications, well, some of those don't apply to women.
Sure, right.
And so this manual will reflect the Titus 2 character qualities of women. So it's clear that it's intended to help women fulfill their biblical role in the church. But again, when it comes to obviously personal discipline, some of those questions will change a little bit with how those are lived out in their lives as well. But the Bible knowledge, theology, those are the same.
So the overall format is identical, but the content, of course, both has shifted months, here and there. Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Yeah. Well, the last resource that I'll mention here, Rocky, is Becoming a Biblical Elder. And that's what I wanted to end with this one. That's what our entire conversation has centered around, XL Ministries training up biblical elders. So tell me about this workbook. It's Becoming a Biblical Elder, a workbook for elder preparation. Now, there are some similarities, I'm assuming, between the leader book, but tell me what this one is about and maybe why it differs strategically, you know, intentionally than the leader book.
Right. So the idea is not that if you go through becoming a biblical leader, you go through becoming a biblical elder. Okay. Biblical leaders just to train Christians generally. But should you identify somebody that you really believe is elder qualified? Now, let me say this. When I say elder qualified, what I mean by that is they do have the character. They're demonstrating that shepherding heart that they need. They demonstrate just a man who has that courage and commitment to do things right. But they also have to have an ability to teach. Now, when I say that, you want to know that they have the capacity to communicate Scripture clearly and accurately, but they may not know as much theology as you're going to want them to know if they actually become an elder. In fact, that would be most often the case, right? And so you have to know a man for years, probably, right, before you move them into this position. You're putting them into a position of great responsibility in the life of the church. The church people need to know them. You need to know them well, not just in the church, but outside of the church, because you want to have a certainty that this man would be truly qualified to do the job. The becoming a biblical elder, then, is a path to take a man down. It's 12 months, if you meet once a month. And the reason we did that is most pastors can't meet weekly. It's just too much. But you can handle once a month in a 2.5 or 3 hour meeting. And really, it's the candidate that's doing most of the work, right? And the mentor questions are all built in. You're just interacting with him with the work that he's doing, the memory he's doing, things like that. And so I would say that if you're going to take a man through becoming a biblical elder, you're going to do it one-on-one. I understand maybe one on two, but you want to know this man extremely well. It may be the pastor that takes a man through. Some churches have a few elders, and each elder takes a man through a chapter, and they just rotate through. So all the elders are actually involved in his training. This manual is specifically designed to help a man understand the seriousness and magnitude of the role, plus be equipped at a much higher level, both on Bible knowledge and systematic theology. So on Bible knowledge, it's going to be the same as becoming a biblical leader, only more. It's going to have key verses, key people, key dates. And again, I understand that not everybody can memorize the same amount, but for an elder, they've got to do pretty well. I mean, because they've got to be able to get around their Bible. They're going to be responsible to protect the flock. So they really are going to have a higher level of capacity to be able to retain that information, because they're going to be using it all the time. I tell people, when it comes to Bible knowledge, they say, why do we need to memorize all of this? It's like, you know what? If I'm teaching a lesson, I know what I'm going to teach, when I'm going to teach it, and how much time I have to prepare. When somebody catches me in the foyer and asks me a question, I better be able to get to the text. Well, Bible knowledge helps you to get to the text. I get it's hard, it's work, but it's valuable in be able to make sure we, you know, the last thing, if somebody asks me for counseling, I don't want to tell them, well, I think. I want to take them to the text. So the Bible knowledge is helpful. On the systematic theology, instead of one question per chapter, there's like 3 to 5 questions. Instead of one theological quote, there's typically 3 to 5 theological quotes per question, because an elder has to be well established in his theology. He needs to understand the issues, and he needs to be able to define and defend his theology. I think it's a sad day when in the church, if somebody goes to the average person and says, why do we believe the Trinity? Probably most people could not answer the question. They send them to the pastor. It's like, what's that about? Our dads need to be able to answer the question. Our elders all need to be able to answer the question. Well, that manual is intended to help them to be well qualified to answer the question. And again, like the biblical leader book, we want them reviewing the entire process, because at the end, we want to be able to ask them any of those systematic theology questions, and they can take their Bible and they can walk us through the Scripture. Well, that takes time. And it takes effort from a man to put in that kind of work. But you want a man who's willing to put in that kind of work if he's going to be an elder. A man who sees the seriousness of the role. And I mean, it's a 12-month deal in for some longer, because it takes longer to really retain that information. But it also then walks through the role of eldership and the responsibility, because there are elements of shepherding that are essential, or that being able to teach, that how important is that? How, you know, can you say, well, we have some elders that can teach and some can rule? It's like, they all need to be able to teach. I'm not saying they all fill the pulpit in the same way. I'm saying they all have the ability to both know the scriptures and defend and explain the scriptures.
So they need to have the giftedness to teach. Well, we understand that there's different capacities, you know, yeah, different spectrum in the giftedness.
Yeah, even 1 Timothy 5 spells that out, right?
Right.
Some who work hard at, you know, preaching, teaching different parts. But so there are distinctions, but they all have to fulfill the role. But it also deals with things like decision-making. For instance, some guys, when they become an elder, they assume they can speak for the elders. An elder cannot speak for the elders. The elders speak together. And it's important to understand that. Unless the elders have given you the responsibility to make certain decisions, you don't have the authority to make the decisions as though you represent the whole elder board. That's the plurality that we need. A lot of churches have a statement in their bylaws or their constitution that says, we always make unanimous decisions. Well, I get that. But unless you have a process to get there, that violates plurality. Because what that says is one man can control your board. Well, that's not good. Now, do you need to hear that man? Of course. He may be right. You want people to talk and to work through issues, but there has to be a process for you to get to that unanimous decision. And it might be that somebody yields their vote for the sake of the plurality, but then they have to support that decision both privately and publicly, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's humility, right? That's biblical humility. So we address those kind of issues within the context of eldership and the importance of being an example. Other people can follow you. All of those things that are serious issues, the accountability you'll have. So the biblical elder manual goes to great length at making sure a man understands. And then, of course, the questions are intended, you know, if he's potentially going to become an elder, it'll encourage him, go to an elder. You see if you can get permission, go attend an elder meeting. Maybe a portion of it you can't be in because it's closed, but begin to understand what it looks like. Be involved in the shepherding, you know, demonstrate your both desire and ability to actually accomplish the work of eldership. And then I think if a man finishes the biblical elder, I mean, the intent is when they're done, unless there's a problem, they're going to become an elder. And at that point, I think a man should have to be able to demonstrate his ability to defend the scriptures before he's made an elder. To me, it makes no sense leaving that off, knowing that the church needs to have confidence that he can actually handle the scriptures and accomplish the work he needs to do. Now, I wanted to say one other thing about the becoming a biblical elder, because that's what it's intended for. But I would say that there can be an advantage if you take young men, let's say college men, through becoming a biblical leader, and they do well, and they're really working hard and they're learning. I think there would be an advantage to take them through becoming a biblical elder, knowing that they're not going to become an elder. That's not the intent. But you want them to understand the elder role. You want them to understand the seriousness, responsibility, character. You want them to be pursuing the character, because that's Christian character. You want them to memorize that Bible knowledge and systematic theology while they're young, and it's easier, so that as they get older, if God should want them to become an elder, they're ready. They just have to get mature enough. The way it is today, we wait till man's old enough, and then we have to try to train them, and they got to try to learn things that are really hard to learn when you're older, really hard to retain. So I do think that there's a place where you could take even a group of young men through some of that, just for the sake of helping them to understand better, learn the theology, understand the character, knowing that, you know, maybe in 10 years or 20 years, maybe in God's providence, he wants them to fill that role, and they're in the church, and they're actually equipped to fulfill it, and now they're mature enough to do that. So I do think there's a place for that.
Yeah, so these resources of course, have a particular focus in mind. However, as you just mentioned there, Rocky, they do center around just basic discipleship. And so they would be helpful on several fronts. And I'm grateful that you guys have all of these resources. Of course, there are others that we didn't work through. But if I wanted to get these resources, Rocky, where would I go to get these resources? Steer right. us in the right direction.
Yeah, you can go to our website. It's just letter X, letter L, xlministries.org. And like I said, you can download anything. They're all fillable if you prefer a soft copy, or you can order them and you'll see we put what our cost is, but it's truly a donation only. So we'll gladly ship our resources to you. And then let me say, there's a place to connect with us, because a lot of times somebody will get the resources and they're just trying to figure out, okay, how do I best implement this in my context? There's a connect button on our website. We'll gladly talk to you. Set a Zoom meeting, work through issues, talk through ideas. So feel free to reach out.
Yeah, sure. That's
our heart. That's what we do. That's how we want to help.
Yeah, well, just as elders aren't detached from the local church, XL Ministries isn't detached from helping churches do these things, right? You guys aren't just shoveling over resources and then just letting go and not, right? That's not the heartbeat behind the ministry. Well, one last thing, Rocky, before we wrap up our time today, what I'd like you to do, we've talked about XL Ministries, talked about training elders, we've talked about those things, resources, but we haven't actually talked about XL Ministries and the internships that you guys offer. Now, I am grateful to have gone through an XL internship. It's been over 3 years ago at this point, but so I've benefited from it immensely. So I know some of the ins and outs. You know it to a greater depth, obviously, because you've been doing this for several decades now, but talk to us about the XL internship, and you don't have to get into all the intricacies, but I would love to hear from your perspective and vantage point what an XL internship looks like.
Yeah. So just to give a general perspective of an internship, our internships are generally 2 to 3 years. They can be with or without seminary, depending on the context that they're in. They're always done under the authority of the local church elders, but we help provide a structure and a standard for the internship. So when a person goes through, whether it's a missions internship or a pastoral or youth ministry internship, that there are certain requirements that a man has to meet. And we actually help with that structure. We help to monitor it. We provide support to the church. There's not a charge for a church to do it or an intern to do the internship. Again, it's just all for the benefit of the church. But the goal is that a man, in the case of a pastoral internship, or a man or woman, in the case of a missions internship, will be under the authority of their local church leadership. They'll experience ministry. If they're not in seminary, they're going to read books and write papers and do things that'll be helpful. Regardless if they're in seminary or not, they're going to memorize a lot of Bible knowledge and systematic theology, more than what's in the Becoming a Biblical Elder. They're also going to be required to fulfill certain responsibilities in the church. For instance, if you have a men's breakfast, a man might oversee that, and then he's going to get an evaluation, how he did on the administration as well as the ministry aspects, et cetera. There's evaluations quarterly on their personal health, family health, teaching, administration, shepherding. So it's a very intentional internship that's done in the local church. As part of the internship, at the end, if it's a man, he has to go through an ordination exam, and that's done at the church with the leaders of the church, and one of us would participate in that with the church leadership. We have all of the information on their evaluations and teaching and different things so that we can provide a really good recommendation for them. But again...
Yeah, let me stop you right there, Rocky. I found this to be helpful. So you just mentioned talking about, or you just mentioned evaluations and giving feedback if, you know, the intern was running a certain aspect of the ministry, but also there's evaluations on their teaching, and there is a record holding of all of... I think the sermon manuscripts, they may be right, they turn in and submit, and then the audio and those things. Now, why are you sort of keeping this database? Why is there an evaluation, a database on that?
Yeah. So there's a couple of reasons. You know, one, if there's a consistent internship with consistent standards, when a man finishes, or again, a woman, if she's going to missions, and people identify it with XL Ministries, they know that a certain standard had to be met. All of our interns, all of their assignments are always uploaded, all their evaluations. We have a man that reads all of that, and he'll send notes of encouragement, et cetera. But we also keep a pretty thorough file on each intern so that when they're beginning to look for a job or an opportunity for ministry, we have 2 to 3 years worth of material to demonstrate what they've done in the local church. Because it is one thing to say, well, I was in such and such church and did an internship, which doesn't often mean a lot. But to say I did my internship in my church, but it was the XL Ministries internship, I mean, that will be known as is a pretty substantial internship and a lot of work that has to be done. We also provide, because the intern the whole time is memorizing Bible knowledge and systematic theology, our goal is when he finishes the internship and takes his ordination exam, he's not cramming. That's a bad idea. The idea is when he finishes his internship, people have practiced so much with him. It's not, is he going to pass? He ought to be able to answer those questions like he's quoting John 3:16. I mean, this is his lifeblood, right? I mean, he has to know this stuff and take it with him because it really is going to be the essence of his life and ministry. So again, we help develop the structure and we provide, you know, a lot of what we do is automated for the evaluation forms and how they're uploaded and things like that. And then let's say you're a solo pastor and you want to do it and you think, but what if I hit a bump in the road and it's a hard time? Well, you know what? That's why XL is here, to provide that support. So if you hit a time and you say, listen, we're going through a hard time, I don't think I'm going to have time to keep up with this assignments a couple of months, we'll assign one of our graduates to him and they will help you. Because I think one of the intimidating things for a solo pastor is like, man, what if I start? And then I just get in a period of time where I'm just struggling to keep up. And again, that's the heart of XL. We want to help you to accomplish that and feel like you've got some support behind you so that you can really accomplish all that you need to do.
Yeah, that's helpful, Rocky. And any final words of encouragement or any thoughts before we wrap up our time today?
I would just say that, you know, you have to start somewhere. So if you've been a church that's not really focused on training at this level, we would love to help. I mean, we revealed some needs that I think are genuine needs and I think important things. We want to help. That's why. And you, really, you can reach out. And whether you're in a little tiny church and a remote part of the country, or you're in a larger church, that's really insignificant. It's that these are the things that God has called us to do. We want to help you with resources, but we will also help you with our time if that would be of benefit to you. So our goal, our desire is to just help the church be the church in every way we can, and not be a burden to the church, but be a blessing to the church.
Sure. That's wonderful, Rocky. Well, we're grateful for your time and efforts in XL Ministries. Thank you for all of your ministry at Countryside through the years. Thanks for coming on to the Faithful Stewards podcast this morning. I know you've got a busy week, and it means a lot that you would carve out a couple hours to meet and chat with me. We're grateful for you, Rocky, and we look forward to having you back down from Colorado at some point in the future to have you on another episode or two.
Be great. Sure, good to see you, Lance. Appreciate all you're doing.